Tabletopped will start after the following messages.
Are you looking for an actual play podcast with young, hot role players, disciplined professional voice actors, and wholesome content? Well, this isn't that podcast. AARPG is an adults-only podcast with interviews, actual play stories where...
Excuse me, Matt, why do you sound like you've been chain-smoking since you were a toddler?
What do you mean?
The voice. You don't have to do that voice, man.
I don't?
Nah, just tell them that we're a group of old friends who like to get together, hang out, play lots of different types of games, and we want them to feel like they're sitting at the table with us. And they can find us just by searching for the AARPG podcast on their favorite podcatcher and at the AARPGs on YouTube.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Tabletop. Today, we are talking about approaching level 20. What do you do when your group is starting to get to that end of level up phase? Levels 17, 18, 19, and of course, that big old 2-0. And of course, we're talking about it with my best friends. Let's go around the table. Let's start with you.
Oh, okay. Hi, it's Franco. I'm level 20.
All right. You?
This is me, your natural 20 friendship, Gio.
What about you over there?
Hi, my name's Shade, and I don't have a joke.
And I'm your host, Nick, and I am perennially 19 again. Okay, let's do it. Anyway, let's talk about approaching level 20. For GMs who are kind of talking about getting close to these really high-level campaigns, no matter what the system is, but we're going to use D&D as sort of like a
internal scaffolding for the
conversation. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. What are your first like big thoughts around getting to this stage of a campaign?
Step one, don't.
Coward.
I stopped you guys when you reached level 17.
It is true.
It's like, hey, here you go. Here's your 17th level. We're done.
Yeah. I this is actually a really good point because Shade and...
I was just trolling.
No,
sure.
No. I think that like Shade and like some other GMs that I've played with or like even in this group of the four of us... We've been talking about how high-level play sometimes makes it really hard to challenge players and everything. But, Shade, you've said multiple times, either off mic or on mic, that this is the time where you're really letting your players feel all of, like, they're flexing on the world, yeah. Essentially. And they're able to really make change. They're able to really put their will out there. So can you tell us why? Because out of all of the people I've met, you really love high-level play. We're going to be doing a level 20 Ico Knights sort of yep. thing as well. Can you give us sort of like a brief why this in your mind is like such an exciting time in the campaign?
So whenever a player sets out, they have these big visions for what's going to happen with that character. And this is the time when those visions can be a reality. Like you said, it's honestly the most... agency-driven part of a character's existence is this fourth tier play, level 17 and beyond.
Yeah.
So that's you know, from a player standpoint, that's why I'm interested in it. From a GM standpoint, I love it because. So you could look at it as, okay, well, now they're just not going to have any threats, or the threats that I throw at them are just going to be these big balloons. Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. But that's kind of the same problem you've had all along, because your players will get creative. They will think of something at level 5 that you're like, holy shit, that just trivialized everything that I put together for
them. I drop a cow on them.
Yeah. or God, this is a slog of a battle because it turns out that a troll is like fighting a cutting board, you know?
Yeah.
So I
It's a good analogy, by the way.
Thank you. I like that.
Thank Both you. Franco and I were like, that is
thank
true.
I would say that these are the same problems you've had all along. The difference is that now this game gets way more collaborative and can go fucking off the rails as much as you want it to, because there needs to be a grounding at that low level play that there does not need to be at that high level play. Okay, shit's weird. Hey, guess what? A fucking portal just opens up and eldritch being that you can't even comprehend is here for some reason, maybe drawn by the fact that you're all firing off these spells and that's hungry for that shit. Deal with that now. Yeah. You know, I would never do that to a group of level threes.
Can I paint a picture using plagiarism?
I mean, I would. I was just...
I'm going to take the audience over here for a second. Come on, audience. Let's huddle up. Let's
Bye,
talk,
audience.
You and me.
This is Geo's thing. Geo likes to huddle.
Yeah.
So if you need help conceptualizing like the tiers of play, I want you to picture in your mind the greatest superhero team of all time, the Fantastic Four. Not the movies, the comics. If you think about
very debatable
the Fantastic Four at like low tier play, they're fighting the Mole Man. You know, he's underground. He's got a subterranean thing. They go explore an exotic locale, but they go back to the Baxter Building. And then you've got, you know, your Doctor Doom stuff, your meat. You know, they're high. They've got their levels. They're fighting a powerful bad guy. It's a longstanding campaign. And now here, fourth tier, we're like, okay. They've seen the Silver Surfer. They've got to deal with Galactus.
Yeah.
Now they've got to go off world. They got to deal with this like major cosmic threat. And you know, sometimes they might meet Jack Kirby as God. And that's just, you know, that's fourth tier. All right, guys, let's break the huddle because it'll take everyone's coming into our thing.
Sorry,
let me into this huddle.
The only comics I read are Donald Duck comics, so I don't have any frame of reference.
I got that about you.
Yeah, can I ask a quick question though? Because for me, this is such a like trepidatious time in a campaign because. And this is hotly debated.
Your question is taking such a long time.
Hey, you got a 10-minute huddle. I get a 5-minute question.
You don't even know what you talked about.
Like, so you were talking about Jack Kirby, seeing God, all that kind of stuff.
I was talking about the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, but this sort of thing does happen in games as well, that you're starting to breach into like multi-planner sort of things. Like you said, eldritch beings are coming. You're doing world-changing magic. To me, this is a time of ending because, like, I feel as though once you taste that, you know, eldritch danger, a group of bandits are never really going to cut it again.
It's a great
you know
band.
What I mean?
So
eldritch danger.
I would say that of course it is the time of ending. That's why most D20 that's not true. D&D ends at level. No. 5e ends at level 20. It is the end game, right? Yeah. Also, great huddle you did there. I think that you...
Yeah, everyone left that huddle. They all had smiles
thanks
on their
acknowledging
faces.
That.
Because it does hit exactly what fourth tier play is. It should be the ending, but...
Or a new
God
beginning.
Damn it. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was trying to think of someone to quote, but I can't. Every ending is a beginning, right?
Right.
Because... This is also the chance. I said that this level of play is the most collaborative period. Mm-hmm. This is the point where your player characters get to now build their own shit.
Yeah.
And you should encourage that as a GM. You should, say, okay, you are, you know, fighting these eldritch beings. You're going to fucking take over for God or something. Yeah. I mean, what does that mean for that character? And that's some great.
And at this point, they should have already built a couple of universities and castles and stuff.
Probably.
In the other earlier forms of tier, which is what my player, they're level 11 right now. And they've had a university for a couple of years now or for a couple of levels.
Yeah.
And also they just got a plot of land for saving a lord.
Nice.
And now they are knighted.
Ooh.
And so, this is.
You know, that's a lower tier of play than the tier we're talking about.
And that's pretty big stuff.
Yeah.
To double back on what you were just saying and what we talked about in another episode, if your players were going to collaboratively like create holidays and stuff, this would be the levels in which they earn that right to inject what they want into the world. Because if you're a level 18, 19 hero of the realm, obviously, if you decide, hey, that's what if we put money and we celebrated like this thing that we did, mm-hmm. and that could carry on down the road.
Yeah. Sorry.
And I was just going to, like, another thing would be, this is also a good time to start thinking about your next campaign.
Correct. Yeah.
It's like, what are these characters going to leave behind for the heroes that come along after them?
Yep. Yeah. And this is, I think this is something that people like long ago used to do or whatever. Like, what you could do is, now that you're level 20 and you're doing like extra planar shit, like, you could build your own dungeon. Hey, yeah. Now you're the DM.
Hell yes. 100% this. This is, again, it's just the most exciting, and the possibilities are limitless at that level of play.
Okay, so we've talked about sort of what we should be thinking about. Why don't we start talking about how to guide your players? Like, you're basically, they have a really firm sense of their character at that point. You hope. And you've built a while towards this. As a GM, what should you be doing for your players specifically to kind of help them into this last tier of play?
Could I answer a question you didn't ask?
Yeah, of course. what not is this podcast if it's not a question and non-answer?
And maybe we'll talk about this more later. I just want to say it now while I'm thinking about it. As you are getting closer to fourth tier level of play, if you don't want to enter fourth tier level, you could go with some people's route of ending the game. But also, you could also look at levels I'm just not looking at Franco. Because you could also sort of like, remember that levels in the world of a game, we'll say D&D, you go from level 1 to level 20 in a roughly like, what you're going to call, like a matter of months. If you're thinking about this like end game time, if you're not doing a lot of downtime, it can happen. Levels could be very temporary things. I'm like, okay, you guys don't adventure for a little while. You know, you do a time jump and you sort of go back down levels a little bit, and that you can stall in that way is all I wanted to say.
I'll support that. I mean, we've talked about, I think one of the very earliest conversations we had was about, what do we do with that player who comes in with this should be a level 20 character, but it's level 1 dude.
Yeah.
And we talked about, yeah, that's a retired adventurer who is starting over, essentially. And I think that's a lot of fun, personally. Yeah. Obviously, it's something you want to talk
like that
with.
Right now.
Yeah,
like, you are. My character should, with his backstory coming in, be like a level 7 or level 10 or something, but is now learning how to fight again because he had his leg chopped off. And so he's learning how to fight with this new appendage that he has.
Right.
So
it's like, if you're a baseball player, but you set out for 3 seasons, you don't go back at the same level you left at.
Yeah,
you have to go, you have to find your groove again. You have to build those muscles back up.
Depending how good you were, you may be paid better than you were originally. I think that that's a lot of fun. You do want to talk with your player about that, obviously. Like,
yeah, that is people would probably hate that.
They will be angry. But there could be some fun on, like,
it's not as a surprise, obviously.
I did know of somebody who once made a dungeon, and this was a very high level dungeon, but like he was talking about how there were these eggs, and if the players touched the eggs, these things would jump out, and they were level eaters. So if they if they essentially attach themselves onto you, they would drain your levels. So you would go from like level 90.
Drain. Yeah,
like
that's an old thing.
Ghosts used to do that.
Ghosts and undead could drain your levels too.
Yeah, so it's like there are ways to do that. I think that is probably a way that your character is going to be like, or your players are going to be like, I fucking hate you.
Yeah.
Than like, hey, you took a break and now you've like lost a little bit of your step kind of thing.
The hobby is at large has moved away from that, but yeah.
I say go back to it. Your players are lucky to be in your game, and you should be able to do whatever you want.
Hey, there's a DM shortage in New York City. Yeah. Or something.
There you go.
I think this is why. Sorry, this is not about level 20 play, but like, there's a lot of games out there that do not use levels. Like, progress is measured in different ways. And I think, like, the reason that players are resistant to losing levels is because when you gain a level, you just like get another box of features to like pick up, and you're like, oh, cool, these are mine now. And then you have like a little thing, and now it's you, and you've like earned these things. And so that means you get to keep them in a video game or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so like when it's something instead where you're like, you know, like a witch touched you, and now you have like, you know, your arm is like a tree branch, like vine, and now you have reach on that arm, yeah. and that's like the special feature that you now have or something yeah, like that. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, and then you get that vine chopped off, and then it's like, well, they got to find a new arm. You know, it's like, it's just like different ways of progressing that aren't just tied to, and like even, you know, talking about like 20th level play, like it can be shit like that too. It's like, once per day, you can, you know, turn into an immortal flame being or something yeah, like yeah. that. Or, you know, like if you close your third eye or you open your third eye and you can like see through time and cast time stop or something like that.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, you can do these like high level things in games that don't have leveling in it.
Totally. I mean, like in our Monster of the Week game. I did kind of different things for both of you. Like for you, mm-hmm. Franco, I turned you into a mundane. Because yeah. I was like, your fucking powers are gone, bitch. and you got them back and everything, but it was like a really fun little moment there. Yeah. And then for you, Shade, I turned you into the divine because yep. you were sort of like re-actualizing yourself kind of yep. thing. So there are different things you can do. Like you said,
made eye contact and then skipped over talking about me completely.
You were not in that game?
Question mark. I am so offended.
For you.
You were like, I told you, like, oh, Franco, I did that to you. And then I'm sure I did that to you. And then you made eye contact with me. Like, I have nothing for you. Fuck you.
Well, I've never played your eyes. To be fair, and don't take this as a
I've
slight.
I've never been fair a day in my life.
I've never gotten through a campaign long enough as your DM in which you have gotten to a high enough level in that, because either we stop playing the game or your characters fucking die or whatever, you know, something changes. So we haven't gotten to high level that. Play with, okay. with you yet, which would be interesting. That's... I wonder how would you be? No, has anyone actually here DM for Daniel at a high level play?
Yeah, 16th level.
20th level.
Oh, yeah, both of them. Yeah. Yeah. So how
was to that? Be fair for him, it was a one-shot.
Gotcha. I mean, but they go for, you know, six sessions at most, three at least. So yeah. that's...
When you, and I could have never...
Danny's character was just sad about getting divorced, so I don't think he really got to do a lot of his fighter stuff.
And also, you always, with your melee characters, which is the ones that I've seen at high levels... You've always like mixed in other things, but you're like, I don't like how barbarians work, or I don't like this fighter. I want to have magic. And so you're always
Daniel
like
misses
a
prestige
10.
Classes.
What is, yeah. I miss your... gestalting and I miss prestiging.
Yeah.
Gestalting.
That's what I would bring back. Yeah.
I agree with you.
What is gestalting exactly?
It's when you mix classes and subclasses.
So basically, if you wanted to be a fighter rogue, mm-hmm. you would get the features of both a fighter and a rogue, mm-hmm. and you would get the higher die types or the higher saves of each class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, with proficiency bonus now kind of takes away a lot of
yeah,
what
but
that
like
was.
You would get like the hit points of a fighter.
Okay,
for but the example. You get skill, all the best, but the skill of selections the, of a
correct.
Rogue.
You get all the best stuff from each class.
Oh, that's very powerful.
Yeah, it's super powerful.
It's like you say. They say it's you're way more powerful than a single class character.
Yeah,
but you're not as strong as two characters.
Correct.
About, because the action economy breaks.
Are you So was this like you reach level, like let's say you reach level 17 or something, you're doing this.
If you're doing a gestalt, you do it from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you have to split your levels, or is it just like as you level both?
Is that 3-5 or what?
Yeah. Yeah, that was in the third. As you get, you're a level 1 fighter rogue and you're a level 2 fighter rogue.
Yeah. Mm. So like,
I mean, you could do this in 5e.
It's not as easy.
You could get to like level 17 or whatever and start multi-classing and have like rogue level 1, level 2, and then just keep going.
That's where
just
I like you have your fighter 20, rogue 20.
Yeah, yeah exactly. I mean, you can do that. It's just definitely not as easy. It's way more cumbersome.
I got introduced to gestalting kind of early. And it has made me hate multiclassing, where I have to choose classes. I like having both.
Multiclassing is a lot of trade-offs.
Yeah, it really is.
Kind of a fun way, but also kind of like this is weird.
And prestige is essentially you get even more specialized in something.
They changed into just the archetypes, I think, for this edition.
Okay. Yeah, largely.
And in Pathfinder, since everything is like pretty modular, does the gestalting kind of work that way too?
I've never tried to do it in Pathfinder. Mm, okay.
This Pathfinder like does feel like you can make a very specific type.
Because they've broken it all down into feats and stuff. You can make your character very like very a la carte in Pathfinder.
So speaking of making your character stuff, let's go back to that question I asked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you get to like a level like...
Politely, I roll it over.
When you get to like level 17 and such, how do you as a GM start guiding people into that level of play? Like you were saying, your level 11 has a bunch of like land and a university now and stuff. And so you've been kind of guiding them into the third tier of play. What is the thing that you want to do as a GM to really get them into the mindset of this fourth tier?
We're definitely ending at level 13.
I guess I'm always preparing them for like a Ragnarok thing at that level of play. I'm like, okay, the world's going to end or you're going to be heroes. I never really thought about like universities and plots of land.
Yeah.
I don't suggest it like the heirloom and like heritage stuff, but I've never actually done it. Because the only game I've ever gotten up to that level was our Gilded Canaries game.
Yeah.
So that was my first experience running a high level game like mm-hmm. that.
So you want to expand their focus first and foremost. You know, they still need something to anchor onto.
Mm-hmm.
You always want to give them an anchor. I don't think it necessarily needs to be, you know, a cataclysm or something like that. I mean, that's often the crutch of many and most games. And there's, you know, I use them.
Yeah,
they're
fantastic. Had a crutch. Okay. Yeah. Fight me. Nope.
Because I'm saying that's
a... Walkers.
that is a specific focus on most games, but you could shift it instead to exploration.
Yeah,
For
me, like one of the ways that I think that I try to shift my player's mindset at this sort of level is instead of like a king or something being like you have to go do this, like you're helping the realm, you have to go do this. At this level, the king is like, what do we do?
Yeah.
Like make the decisions and I'll do whatever you tell me to do.
Yeah.
And in that,
you're the soft power behind the crown.
Yeah. So it becomes a thing of like a GM almost like it becomes harder to prep this way. But mm-hmm. I think it's also sort of like this is the thing that's happening. All of the people in power kind of look to you and say, what do we do? And like you make the decision. So like that can get to the point of, you know, you guys are at a war council and you're moving armies around.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing that you're all sort of going in.
Like you guys did in
my
game.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, you're only level 16. You can do this whenever you want.
You can.
Honestly, like I think the general flow is like first tier, your hometown heroes. Second tier, your region heroes.
Yep.
Third tier, your like
your wanted nation.
Fourth tier is like you're now like
everyone
world hopping, kind of stuff.
That's generally the
world
idea.
You're world hopping.
Yeah.
But again, in my games, you guys world hop pretty much from go.
Because at this level of play, unless you're doing an extra plan or campaign, mm-hmm. which is totally fine,
It's fine.
But
it's okay, Shade.
Yeah.
This is not an intervention.
No, it's fine.
But
it's
I feel like at this level of play, you are sort of freeing the players from the chain of command almost.
Yeah.
And are saying like, you are the commanders now and I'm going to respond. It's almost like kind of a switching of roles in some way, because now you're saying like, now you guys are driving the story and I am responding because I've made the situation.
But again, you know, you can do this at any tier of play.
Yeah.
This is the point where you should be doing it. You can still craft a special narrative for them, but this is also the point where they've earned that right, like you said.
Shade's pointing at us in turn, trying to assuage us like a dad.
Here's the thing about things that I say.
Everything I do is like a dad.
Is that I don't necessarily believe them.
Listen,
later.
You can play the video game first, and then whoever wins can sit out the next game and play with the other person.
Franco, tell him it's multiplayer. Just keep the other one turned off, okay?
Oh, classic.
That was me.
Franco.
I'm the baby.
I think that I maybe do this too early in a lot of cases where I'm just like, all right, what do you guys think you should do? Rather than like, this is happening, you're responding.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just me.
It's all style, baby.
It's all style, baby.
But, you know, I...
Don't deliver my lines better than me.
Tortles all the way down.
We got another thing you could do to kind of like, you know, I like this idea of
Shade just shouldering forward.
The world is, you know, asking you what to do. This is also a time where you can still keep it in the material plane, but there are extraplanar forces maybe. This time where they're just trying to get you on their team. Because
Asmodeus comes to you not as like, I'm going to destroy you, puny whelp. It's more like,
Asmodeus,
how can I convince you to do what my bidding. I need you to do?
Where he's like, oh, they're trying to force you into a decision of archdevil or archangel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, what if I decide to be an avatar of the material plane?
Yeah. Right. So, like, you know, that can kind of be a direction you can go with it. Other ways that you can kind of help guide your players to this point, you can begin to ask them about the corners of the map.
Yeah.
You know, that's a place where maybe the world that you've built is your baby and you don't want to have them fuck it up in some way. Mm-hmm. But there are corners and borders that you have not touched as a GM. This is where those high level players, player characters can.
So you build your world wrong.
Yeah,
you know what? I'm gonna blast you right now. You came in right before this recording, and you were like, you know, I started thinking about this thing that we have been focused on for months in my game that I'm running, and you know, how did that actually work? And I went, yeah, you're thinking about the cosmology, the thing that you fucking start with.
Wow.
So anyway.
So first of all,
you built your world wrong.
Second of all, you're wrong about everything. Third of all, you don't start with the cosmology.
You do.
You start with the town. You don't start big and go down. You start down and slowly build.
Oh, so I'm sorry. You're making the point that I was making then. At some point, you're going to get to a level of play where you didn't build that.
You should have built it all before you started playing.
Oh, you tricked him, though.
He just dabbed at Daniel so hard.
No, you're all wrong. Listen to my words.
Hey, we'll be right back after this break.
How do you fix a quandary? There's only one solution. Portal Quandary is a Dungeons & Dragons real play comedy dramedy podcast about a party of mismatched heroes trying to do just that. Join Dungeon Master Tyrone Cross as he hurls our Melbourne-based party into a mystical world full of strange creatures, stranger people, and strangest of all, unanticipated self-discovery. Gross. Listen to Portal Quandary now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Episodes released tri-weekly.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick, from the Tabletop Podcast. When I'm not hosting, I'm thinking about ways to create a better podcast for you guys, and I think I landed on something pretty fun. In fact, if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/tabletopped and join for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a new episode a month that we're going to start putting out. In fact, we're going to be calling this one Wild Magic, I think, in that we're going to talk about anything and everything that interests us, not just TTRPGs, though there will be a lot of that. It is truly unhinged, and if you are a fan of the podcast and all of the hosts, you're definitely going to want to be on it. We're thinking of dropping these at the end of each month, so join our Patreon today. That is patreon.com/tabletopped. Oh, and there's going to be so much more coming out in the new year there, so don't miss it. Sign up today.
You start small.
Welcome back, everyone.
And then you build out, but you should build it out completely before your players come there.
As you can tell, on Tabletop, we don't have just one opinion.
We all hate each other's opinions to the core.
The fact that we're friends is a miracle.
Why we have so many ongoing games.
That's why we have this podcast, because we all just kept arguing.
We were like, what if we recorded it and other people listened to it? Yeah, we're four guys with a podcast.
This is the first time ever that this has happened. Anyway, so we've talked a little bit about what you can start to do to start bringing your characters into this level of play. Now, as a GM, what is like? What does prep look like in this time? So you are trying to prepare something that will get your players invested, but also challenge them at a fourth tier level of play. What are you thinking about when you make these sessions? And I'm not talking about storylines or going extra planner or anything like that. Like, how are you building things to challenge characters that are very powerful?
I'm building a new campaign for level one characters. I'm going to sit out for the rest of this.
When I was in sixth grade, I had a book report that was due, and I didn't do it. And so I ad-libbed my way through it. And I think at this stage of play, I wouldn't really do a lot of, I don't know if I could prep for that.
Sorry.
I just have to improv my way through these challenges.
So you're saying that you didn't build it all the way out then?
No, it's built. We're talking about the specific challenges of the session. How are you going to challenge your players?
So you didn't build everything.
It is built. Yeah, the world is built. The world exists. It's a foundation. Come at me, son.
I think Gio's got the correct way of it. You need to be more loosey-goosey about this. Be ready to improv. You could still have some broad stroke ideas, and you should. As far as challenges go,
I just want to interject this as we're talking about challenges, and it's going to be to your point. Mm-hmm. But I think at this point, a non-planned death is going to really hurt player happiness. Mm.
That's an interesting point of view.
You've made it so far. What?
Who are you killing?
No, I'm just saying if like your players and you're challenging them and one of your players like hit zero HP and they die and it's like right at the end, they've come so far, they've gotten so close to like that 20th cap.
But in the end, it doesn't even matter.
See, I'm gonna just throw out there, yes, I think that I think you're right, but also this is the level where they have the most say in how that goes down because – again, this is where you're getting real extra planner about shit. There's tons of ways to revive them. You could literally go to the Hells or wherever the fuck that character ends up.
Wow.
I just assumed Hells. I'm sorry.
Your hero should go to heaven. Or you're playing wrong.
But, you know, there's some interesting things that can happen there.
No one does like a game where they go to heaven. Everything's hell.
Oh, no.
All the time it's hell. Dante's Inferno.
No.
Drag me to hell.
All dogs
evil
go to heaven.
Dead.
Hey, dog.
where's the heaven theme?
Oh, you mean it?
Oh, yeah. It's Dante's Purgatory and Dante's Paradise.
No one talks about those books.
But I will say, as far as adventures go, absolutely. Mount Celestia in D&D, one of the best adventuring places.
Never been there. No one talks about it.
Well, we will go there. It's one of the best adventuring places. Amazing. Elysium, amazing. Like, there are wonderful places to adventure in extraplanar heavens.
It might exist, but no one goes. Like, heaven exists, but no one goes there. Everyone goes to hell.
I will let you know Mount Celestia was a central playing spot for a good while.
You know what would be like, really cool for higher level play is like the strength of their will and their strength of their beliefs are so strong that if you are doing a planescape thing that can like drag full Borderlands into different things.
I had to 100% stop myself from saying that exact thing because that's what that is.
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, he may be, yeah, he's going to planescape. Okay. Because that's what planescape is.
That's so very fun.
This is an ad for Planescape.
This is another ad for Planescape.
Yeah, go check out our episode about that. Pretty good.
I was going to say challenges.
Yeah, challenges because...
you know what? Fucking's
a challenge.
I I think that the challenges should be...
I can't support what I just said.
I think the challenges should be quandaries rather than, oh, this is a difficult enemy to beat. This is also where, you know, maybe your enemies don't have
like, do we use our power to make these things do what we want them to do? These things being people.
Yeah. Are we misusing our power? Are we?
You mean Dewey decimal.
You know, are we using our power for good? Are we using it for bad? Things like that. You should also, for the enemies, I think they should be If you really want to have a challenging enemy, you should look towards borrow from other systems like Monster of the Week, where, okay, yeah, you took that monster down to, you know, that lich down to zero HP or whatever. It's not dead, though, and it's going to rise again here in a clock.
You could do, like, more World of Warcraft type of stuff, yeah, where it's like, you have killed the Lich King, but someone has to sit on the throne.
Yeah.
You know, that kind stuff of stuff. Like that. It becomes a little bit...
Sacrifice.
Is it Albion?
Hmm?
The World of Warcraft. Is that Albion?
Oh, no, it's Azeroth.
Azeroth, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And all of the worlds are, like, actual, like, creatures in World of Warcraft. They're, like, yeah, spirits. It's very weird. Anyway. Aww.
But yeah, sacrifice is the key word. And that's also...
What's Albion?
I don't know. Is it? I would also really like to challenge characters socially. I think that it would be interesting to get to a point where just like normal NPCs are evil, are either worshipful, mm-hmm, or incredibly scared of you.
Yeah, it's a social challenge. Yeah, you showed up wearing the wrong outfit.
Yeah.
But it's like
you're overdressed.
Like you could go and like a pickpocket runs by and you like grab
incinerate them.
Yeah, but you just obliterate them on accident because you're so powerful at that point, and it's like and everyone's so scared of you and you're like, oh shit.
And that begins to rise up nations because you've now you've grossly misused your power, and now a whole city, a whole country, a whole world is now against you. Yeah. You've become the villain. You could also go with the fact that everyone sees you as a benchmark, and
people are trying to
take you down.
Oh yeah, you're constantly under threat. Like yeah, you have all this power, but that means people are constantly trying to take it.
Because there is the kind of cliche, but it's also like interesting to me of like, I guess the cliche of almost like a dojo challenger where someone like shows up.
You're and
you're
a gym leader now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where it's like you are just like, you know, in this king's retinue or whatever. But every week, a champion of some area is like, I challenge you. And then you're like, no, man. And they're like, I'm not going to like wait until you're ready. I'm just going to attack you.
Yeah. Hey, this place used to have two gyms, but then the psychic gym came over and kicked our asses.
Yeah. Yep.
There you go.
And then on top of that, your characters may be invulnerable, but you've had 17 levels to have them develop relationships. Be the monster that lives inside of your heart and steal those NPCs.
Attack other parts of their character sheet.
And this might be... this might be wrong, but... You guys ever watched Afro Samurai?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I believe there was two bandanas, and if you had the first bandana, the second bandana was hunting you down to kill you, but everyone wanted to take on the second bandana, and that's kind of where you are at this tier of play. You're like, oh, if I can take that power, then I could go and become a god, or I can move on to the next step. And so you kind of become the target that everyone's after.
100%.
That would be an interesting thing to give to your players, too, of like, you are anointed by Deity X or whatever that like
Deity X
that you are on your way, but people who want to get there, they want to take your place, essentially, like what you were saying. But it could just be like your character is still good. You're not like turning them evil. You're not turning them against anyone, but it just turns to like the power holders in societies and stuff are all just like, this is we need you.
Like,
to go
how many times can you send a knight who wants to go challenge this person before they stop dealing with it diplomatically? Go another one and just start killing people because it's like they're annoyed that this keeps happening.
And I mean, you have to definitely balance that because you don't want to actually annoy your players. Like, oh god, another fucking silly bandit king or something like that. Like, you got to find that balance.
It's like, what is there a cop on every corner every time I commit a crime?
I would also say that
yes, which is something I established at the beginning of Waterdeep.
Also, I would say that there's a little tool that I like to use that I found. I forget what her name was, but a very cool person on YouTube.
You can't call someone a tool.
Here we go. But it's the rumor jar, essentially, when I was playing it with a work game that I do, and it's like very local. It's within one city, so everyone kind of hears these rumors, and I pull them out to see how NPCs feel about the party. But once you start getting to this level of play, the rumors are like legends, and they are so influential that not only maybe they create festivals and holidays, but maybe they also like create whole areas that are hostile to the players and stuff like that, just because of like a story that was told in a certain way. Like you killed a dragon that was attacking a town, but that was the dragon that protected
And the character has a specific like look or vibe or haircut or way of like manner of dress or whatever. And then everyone that wears that type of manner of dress or like has that trait is like persecuted or attacked or whatever, or barred from the city.
Or if it's like maybe you have a whole party of like non-human people, and then all the humans are like, we're scared. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like this group of like non-humans has become so powerful that we're like terrified.
It's almost as if representation would be important.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, I'm thinking specifically about a world that I'm playing in where the Dragonborns, their like society is very survival of the fittest, just based on the region that they're from. And so when people encounter Dragonborns, even ambassadors, they're like, "Hey, man, like let's be chill," because like if you challenge them in some way, their culture has like
they'll one up it.
Yeah, they'll be like, "I need to because." That is how I've survived this long.
Oh, that's how rednecks work too. I'm from that.
It's true.
You accidentally challenge someone, great. Now you're in a fight and you don't even know why.
Yeah. God, I was going to say a couple of other fun, silly ideas. Straight up, there's a group of fae or doppelgangers or something that are 100% going around impersonating you and utilizing your...
That's great. Your
identity theft is a crime.
It is, Jim.
That's in a lot of animes, too. And it's one of my favorite things of like... They're like, what? We're, you know, someone's trading on our name. And then they somehow encounter the group that just like is like an ugly version of all of the characters. And it's like, oh, wait, these guys?
These guys? And then also, if you're familiar with Kuatoa, Kuatoa are these wonderful fish folk that have been influenced by years of subjugation by mind flayers and other eldritch means, and they can essentially worship an idea into existence. You were talking about rumors and legends.
Yeah.
What did they hear about you?
Yeah.
And suddenly there is a terrible representation of you in the world,
because at that point you are sort of doing like people are giving enough psionic energy towards you that they've made sort of like these demigods that are like inverse
portions, and it's not you. Maybe, or you could even
it's Shadowlink.
Shadowlink,
kind of how some gods might work.
100%.
Nick.
you guys want to start Pantheon's Part 2? I'm ready.
Fucking, I'm always ready to throw down on that. So there's a lot of fun little things that you can do and guide your players with. But there's one thing we haven't talked about. And, before we get too far into this episode, because I think we're coming up on, 40
close. Yeah,
right
we're
now?
We're getting close.
So pitfalls. What are pitfalls that...
Yeah, I think that the big pitfall for me is that hit point bloat you were talking about. Mm. And what I think that a lot of people take high level characters and then they're just like, let's just make problems that they were dealing with at level 5 the bigger version of those problems. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's more interesting, just variety. Speak more. So like if let's say at level 1, you're dealing with like a group of bandits around. Mm-hmm. At level 6, you're dealing with a group of bandits and a bandit king who like has heard of you. At level 11, you're, thinking of like, the thieves guild that like commissioned the bandit king to do stuff. And you're just kind of playing the same adventures except at a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Like, I think that what you
level 17 is the bandit god.
The bandit god, yeah.
The concept of banditry.
You're playing the concept of banditry. But like, I think that when you get to higher levels, just like, be careful of variation of play. So like, they have a lot of features now. They have a lot of spells. They have a lot of stuff. Make them use it in more different ways that they haven't been able to use it before. Like, Time Stop is cool. Instead of always using it in combat, maybe have them like need to break in somewhere and break out being undetected, and they time stop, and then you literally have like a timer of them trying to get through a maze or a puzzle.
It's only like...
Time Stop sucks in combat.
Time Stop is... Not that great. It's like, well, that's like what, max 24 seconds?
Yeah, like maybe there's like a checkpoint or whatever, and they're trying to get through the checkpoint undetected. And then you're asking them like, what, how do you want to do this? And they can say like, I guess I want to fight all of these people. But they could also try to use like their utilities and their feats and all that stuff that they've like slowly earned to try to do something else, you know?
The number of times I've used my phone bill to get through a skill challenge.
Your phone bill?
Your utilities.
Good. So, Shade, any pitfalls that you can think of?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest pitfalls is my favorite thing about these games, and it's, I just don't want to deal with that, and so they teleport away. Mm. You know, we're already in Waterdeep. I have been so thrilled the last couple of Waterdeep sessions when you did this, where you essentially solved problems by teleporting away or banishing something. For me, I was just like, fuck yeah, that's so awesome. But also as a GM, that is kind of like, well, that little bit of the problem is gone. Yeah. There's no, you know, that's like, whoo, just gone. Or the wish spell, you know, like. Yeah.
I think that the wish spell is actually such a good bridge from level 20 into level 21 of like, you make a wish, the entire world fundamentally changes.
Yeah.
And maybe monkey's paw style, not in the way that you wanted.
Yeah. But, you know, I love sidestepping issues like that. It's really more of a caster thing than it is a material or a martial thing, rather. And but at the same time, it's just like, okay, so you don't want to do that. What do you want to do now? Like,
yeah, I think also like a pitfall that I just came up with thinking about what you were saying is treating your players and like asking them the questions that you asked them when they were level 10.
Yep.
Like these people are way more powerful, way more influential, way more like when you get to this place, you get what you want. You know what I mean? So it's not a question of like, what are you wanting to do right now? It's more
talking about like your player characters, and I could be that person, but I would, oh God, I just hate the fact that, oh, I'm so powerful, I can just have whatever I want. As a concept, I'm mad at these imaginary people.
Geo, like what I'm saying though is that is the point of this level of play of like groups of people are like, what assholes? They just like took over. Maybe the characters are like, we had to banish all magic from this this area because it was opening a wormhole that would swallow the world. But then all of the people in that
fucking
area are
fascist.
Like, I can't use magic anymore. Why do you get to tell me how to live my life kind of thing? And those are the questions I think you stumble into in this level of play rather than you need to get into a castle.
It's more like, how do you deal with your successes?
Yeah.
The thing that I sighed just now has nothing to do with any of this. Do you want to hear about it anyway?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. This will be a great way to close out the episode.
So the monkey's paw thing, the thing I hate about Wish is actually that I'm really bad with coming up with like monkey paw things. I just thought of one for the thing that my players wished for in the last time they were able to wish for something. They won a wish in a breakdancing battle, and they were very nice about it, and they wished for the final component of the antidote that they needed, which was the Eye of a Tiger.
Yeah.
It's a joke. Yes, yeah. It is a joke. It's intentional.
No, but I know what the problem, the monkey paw is here.
I just thought of it.
Yeah.
You get the Eye of a Tiger, but it's your eye.
Yeah.
Oh.
What?
I just thought you were going to summon a tiger into existence.
You got to get its eye out.
Yeah, so you have to pluck out your own eye. That's
yeah.
Private. Yeah, of course. I mean, do you remember when Greg had that wish thing and I totally fucked him over on that? I think you should always use
it. It was during the Tomb of Bill Annihilation.
Yeah, when he was like, man, I wish my sword was fixed. And I was like, okay.
And what happened?
Well, it was just because he had like a wish ring. He wasn't like, I want to use my wish ring and this is what I wish for. He just said in conversation, I wish my sword was better.
Yeah,
and I was like, you have a better sword.
Well,
and that's how I would actually do it. Like if they prepare wish, that it's not sort of like an active cast. It is, man, I wish for this. Your spell slots go. You wish for that sandwich. You have a sandwich. And now you can't use wish again or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about how bad I am at the monkey paw thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, it's so hard to, because it's always like, oh, I get a wish. I'm going to wish now. I'm like, fuck. It's like, can we take an hour break so I can think of a really good monkey paw for this?
My fiance's dad, and she told me like when she was a little kid, he would play this with her all the time. And I think it's such a great game. It's called Evil Wizard. And he would say, all right, try to tell me a wish that you have in a way where I can't turn it against you, essentially. And so like, I wish for $1 million. Okay, you have $1 million, but they are, you know, somewhere that you can never use them, kind of thing.
Or it's a million Monopoly dollars.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, I want like 1,000 quarters in my house, on my bedroom that I can spend. And it's like, okay, but all the quarters are in your house on your bed and they can never be moved or something like that.
They all like weigh $1 million.
Yeah,
pounds.
Exactly. So like that is the game that they would play.
I should play that so I can get practice.
Yes, to get the monkey paw.
Can I help your monkey paw situation?
I mean, it's too late, but yes, go ahead.
No, it's not.
Huh?
What they got a tiger's eye, right?
Well, yeah, and they used it already. Uh-huh. Created
there's a tiger kin that's like I'm
there's
not
a rakshasa out there.
Ooh,
that is missing an eye.
Huh?
And is pissed off about that.
Yeah. There's a rakshasa.
Love
in the game.
Rakshasas.
The long, the Longburn.
Hespero is in the game. I don't know if they've seen him yet.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've seen him since that.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you could just be like, even the Rakshasa doesn't know, but is like looking into it. And so they meet Hespero again and he's missing an eye.
Yeah.
And they're like, and he's like, yeah, I'm trying to find some
that's really
fuckers.
Fun.
Yeah, man.
Have they seen
nothing is
since?
Ever, even if they had, it's another Rakshasa. Like there's nothing ever
it's
too fucking late.
Yeah,
it's the Bakasura.
Yeah,
there's nothing
yeah.
ever
so
too
much
late
scarier,
for that
to
shit.
Be honest.
Bakasura would be for context, Hespero is a crime lord Rakshasa masquerading as a human. The Bakasura was like his enforcer lieutenant who was way more bloodthirsty and genuinely a threat in ways that That'd Hespero be... was not. Hespero plays the con.
Because it's also like maybe like Hespero like the Bakasura knows who it was, but like Hespero, if they're still on good terms with him, he's been like, hey man, like chill out. These guys are with me. But as soon as they go against, like they should be like, no, I'm not going to do that for you. He's like, okay. And the Bakasura's like, crack.
Yeah. And this is also fun for ending high level play. Is things that they did in the campaign earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Taking notes. Yeah, and now is a chance to like bring those consequences
always be doing
back
that.
Later.
Yeah.
Hold on to those threads.
But that's, and this is like that low, that end fourth tier play is where what threads have we wrapped up?
Yeah.
Wrap them up now. This is the time. And go ahead and slow down the level progression at that point.
Yeah. Milestone.
You know, move it to milestone if you weren't already on there.
Or just reduce all the XP they receive by half.
Yeah.
They don't need it.
If you like
or
that.
Or just make it so that anytime, like for them to get a level after 17, which is like the levels that you get at 17 are out of control.
Yeah.
So like you have to do something really specific that would change you forever or something.
Yeah. In a homebrew I had, borrowing kind of from, because like I really liked Curse of Strahd's the way they did the milestones. They very nice, clear outlining of milestones instead of you finish this chapter, which is what most of the books are. You finish this chapter, so they gained a level. Okay, fuck off.
Tell them.
I don't know. It's so dumb. It's like, okay, yeah, you guys get a level. But I really like there are specific quests tied to milestones. I did that. I actually gave my group so many things. I was like, you get levels from this and you'll notice there are more than 20 levels here. So if you get through the 20 and there are more things you're trying to do, there are other things you're going to get from this. Yeah. Like,
I'm going to talk about me for a minute.
Why don't we talk about this in the next episode?
Bye.
Oh, my God.
See everyone.
Oh, my God.
Next Monday for another episode of Tabletopped. Bye.